Welcome to the Entrepreneur's Logbook podcast, where we uncover the strategies and insights driving extraordinary business growth. Today, we're joined by Scott Roy, CEO and founder of Within and Roy Partnership, a global sales consulting firm transforming how organizations approach complex B2B sales and help social enterprise deliver life-changing solutions in developing countries. Scott brings over 40 years of sales leadership experience from his early days as a commissioned salesperson to co-founding Family Heritage Life Insurance Company, which built over $3 billion in assets. His work now spans over 53 countries, focusing on what he calls decision intelligence selling, a revolutionary approach to ethical selling that aligns profit with societal impact. Scott, it's great to have you on the show.
Great. Thank you, Zach. I'm glad to be here.
Cool. I think perhaps like the best place to start this would be to get like a little bit of your background, because you've obviously been in the space for quite a while. A lot of people are into sales, but you've been doing this for like 40 years. So I'd be curious to hear how you even got started in the sales space, just to
Well,
kick things off.
you're being kind. It's actually 47 years.
Okay.
So, how I
Fair
got into
enough.
sales. I was in college at Wake Forest University in North Carolina, and it was my just coming back in my sophomore year after a summer working at a pancake house flipping pancakes, and I made pretty good money with that. But and a friend of mine had gone out to Missouri with this company and had sold books, educational books, door to door to families. With kids, obviously. And so he made $4,500. And I thought, whoa, that's nearly three times what I saved in my summer, right? And so I said, I want to do what you're doing. And so I signed up to go sell books door to door. And that's what I did. So I went out and I sold books in Illinois that summer. It was the hardest job I've ever had in my life. Boy, if you can do that, you can do just about anything. But it laid a foundation of not just selling capability or sales ability, but of determination and perseverance, sticking with things and really stretching your attitudinal mastery. I mean, it was really a remarkable experience. It was so remarkable that I came back again the next summer. And then the next summer, and the next summer, and the next summer. So I did it for 5 summers. And each year I would bring people with me on a team, and I was their sales manager, you see. And so I learned all sales management skills. So literally by the time I was 26, I guess, 25, I guess it was, I had 5 summers of doing this, and it was incredibly intense and incredibly educational. And so that's my whole career has been founded on that early experience with a really fine company that taught me well. So,
Interesting. So you've had like firsthand experience, because I know like a lot of people will always say like, hey, if you're trying to get into business, the first thing that you should be doing is sales. And even people not into business, because sales is a skill that can be applied to like any context. Like if you're
sure.
speaking to someone, you're selling yourself. You're going on a date, you're selling yourself in a way. And I think that's interesting. And you've had like that firsthand experience with like door-to-door selling, where get to meet people, get rejection, get to start just like the entire process of selling. And then you somewhat moved on to more like a management position. So that was more, you got to like develop like your leadership skills in a way, where like first it was more sales oriented and then leading other people.
Well, those 5 summers I did it, I was actually a selling manager as well. You see, so I was managing a team of people, and I was horrible at it first, but eventually, I learned from that experience. But then I had a full selling schedule as well, you see. So I was leading by example, the people that I was managing. And then at the end of 5 years, then the company hired me full time, and I was a sales manager where I didn't go to the field to sell. And so I built organizations of anywhere from 100 to 150 people over a period of 6 more years of doing that. So I had 11 years of doing this, and then took that on to to build a company and or a couple of companies actually. So it's been
Yeah,
really
and did
amazing.
you jump as like a sales manager like directly? Like I'm assuming maybe like one or two of those first years you were doing like more like a door to door, like being like the salesperson. Like when did you actually like get to like the sales management position, I guess?
Well, the formal sales management position where I had an office and all of that, it was after 5 summers. So,
Okay.
My summers was when I would do it out of college, or after the semester, and then so I was a selling manager in the field, like a what we called it a student manager, but then I became a district sales manager entering my sixth year with the company.
And like one thing I'd be really curious about, because your company, you someone have like two like segment within your company. You have like the component where you guys help like companies, corporation, more like B2B oriented, but then you have like the other facet where it's more like societal impact, like working with companies trying to have like an impact on the world. And I found that really interesting because there's not a lot of people that are going to think, okay, like how can I use sales to help with a societal impact? Like that's the last thing you would think about. If you think about sales, B2C, B2B, company growth, revenue, and all that fun stuff. I guess one of the things I'd be curious about, because you've obviously spent decades in traditional sales, like before shifting to that more like societal impact work. What's some of like sparked that like transition that you were like, hey, like we could actually help these people. There's actually like a lot of potential for like improvement. And then by doing so, like we could just really create like an impact on the world.
Sure. Well, it sort of goes back a ways to when I first started in selling. It was always a very purpose-driven experience. The company made sure of that. Okay, the company really helped us understand that what we were selling, the educational books, that was a mission we were on, and what better group of people to sell books and education than college students, right? And so it was really a very purposeful type of work that we did. And then going into insurance and founding that insurance company, which was the next thing I did, along with three other partners, we really saw the purpose of the type of insurance we were selling in providing the kind of protection that those families needed. And so my work has always had that sort of cut to it, And then I was in the insurance business for 11 years and I sold my interest, and that was when the company only had 120 million in assets, which was still pretty good, but now it's $3.5 billion or something like that. I still call it my company even though I haven't worked there in about 25 years, but essentially I retired, at age 40 and or 42, I guess it was, and then I just decided to retire and do nothing. That lasted about 6 months. There's just so much golf you can play, right?
That's
And
fair.
so then I decided, okay, I'm gonna start giving back, right? And so I volunteered with a volunteer organization, and then I got a job as an executive director of a foundation that worked in the charitable space, thinking that I could use my skills as a leader to be able to run an organization that delivered good in the world. And I did it for 5 years and nearly pulled my hair out. I mean, a lot of organizations in the charity sector are not very efficient. There's a lot of wastage in there and everything else. And so I finally left that and got into consulting. So that's the background that got me into consulting. And then once I became a consultant in 2006, I guess it was, is that we were focused on the commercial sector in England primarily, is where I was focusing. That's where my wife is from, and that's where I was living at the time. And so my business partner and I were just going after large companies or medium-sized companies and working with them. I mean, named companies, like Hitachi
Course.
and British Telecom. So, I mean, really meaty jobs. And then I did a volunteer assignment with an organization called Voluntary Service Overseas. And I went over to Cambodia and I spent 6 months there living on $600 a month. And in an apartment and very, very meager surroundings and all this kind of stuff. And it was a great experience. I just learned so much about just kind of dialing back the Western lifestyle and tuning in to the Asian lifestyle. And what I discovered there was this thing called a social enterprise, which was really new at that time. This was 2007, I believe. But social enterprises were just really beginning to be born at that time, which essentially is taking philanthropy from being a giveaway, like giving a man a fish and letting, all that stuff, to actually teaching him how to fish, which is what social enterprise is really all about, is how do you, how do you use the power of business to be able to solve poverty problems? Okay, so as an example of that, let's say, for example, a company is, it has a mission to sell solar lighting, very small, kind of four lights or whatever, to replace candles or kerosene burning in a home, And it just transforms the house. It just absolutely transforms the space where kids can do their homework, they can read, it's white light, it's just, safe. You don't have the inhaling of fumes and all that kind of stuff. But instead of giving it to a family, you would sell it to them. And that's why sales is so critical right now. That's how sales really serves social enterprise so well, is because then if you can sell it, then you have a more sustainable business that will continue to sell those solar lights to many, many families, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of families. And it really can change, the course of an entire nation, quite frankly. So that's really, where, I look at the commercial, space that we work in. I look at the social enterprise space that we work in, and I just see it's all the same. And we bring our expertise to both sectors, fully. And although we really do enjoy the social impact space, because you can see the impact immediately.
Impact. And I feel like going back to like what you were saying, like once you started working, it seems there was always been like a mission, like a why behind like everything that you were doing, and like any organization that first you've started working in and then you've started founding, etc. There was always this mission around like why you're doing something. And like one good example to use is you were talking about the insurance space. If you're not in the insurance space, there's like a lot of misconception around it where people think insurance is evil. But if you think about it a little longer, insurance is like really a good industry. Like you're protecting families, you're helping them be safer, and then you're giving them that peace of mind. And I feel like, again, as you mentioned, just being able to have like that purpose, like a why behind anything you're doing is interesting. And then by going obviously in like the sales aspect of things, you somewhat saw that it was like the same thing. I mean, same concept, but this has had an impact. You're able to see that impact in a way, perhaps a bit more like heavily with like these developing like countries. And I think, look, one thing I'd be curious about is with like your book, like Sell Well, Do Good, you somewhat challenge the notion about selling being like really about like pitching, like pressure. Could you like walk me through somewhat what that like decision intelligence selling like
Sure.
framework looks like into like practice at least?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The two books we've written cover it quite well. So one is called Decision Intelligent Selling, and then the other one is called Sell Well, Do Good. And one is geared toward the commercial space, and then Sell Well, Do Good is geared toward more business to consumer in the global South, which is what they call the developing world these days. Okay. And so what decision intelligence selling is very simple. And that is, it focuses on starting with the problem that a customer has, okay, that a potential buyer has. So, again, going back to the solar lighting example, the problem somebody has is they're lighting their home with dim, poor, dangerous open flame lighting.
Not the brightest idea.
What could possibly go wrong in a grass in a grass house, so, or a wooden house, so that there's a problem there that the consumer doesn't necessarily even know they have, because they've grown up that way, and that's what everybody does in the neighborhood. Everyone uses open flames, right? Grew up that way. My mother, my grandmother, my grandma, we've always just had an open flame. So people aren't always aware of a problem that they have until they begin to have a conversation about it. So it always starts with, what's the current situation that you're doing? How do you light your home? Well, we use this kerosene, really. Is it, and how many lights do you have in the home? Well, we have usually three or four a night. And I said, and then say, well, what are some of the challenges you face with lighting that way? And then you begin to get into unpacking and making and bringing to people's awareness the problems that they've been putting up with,
Yeah, and
that
they
they've
haven't
fallen.
even realized.
Yeah, they've fallen
Yeah.
asleep to. They don't even know that there's something that's different. Okay. But as soon as they begin talking about it, and they say, yeah, well, my child, when they were three, oh my gosh, they tipped it over and it lit a chair on fire. And then all of a sudden, they got burned on their hand and they've got scars because of that. And so, or sometimes people say, well, I've got that cough, or my eyes always burn and itch because, so there are lots of different things that during a sales conversation, they begin to put together.
Yeah.
And so, spending 5 or 10 minutes on the problem like that really awakens people to what they've been asleep to or not aware of. And so that's what we mean by leading with a problem. And it's the same
Yeah.
thing in the business world. Okay. So when somebody calls you up and says, hey, Zach, let me tell you what I can do for you, and they're
Yeah.
pitching, leading with what the product or service is. Really, really good salespeople, they won't do that. What they'll do is they'll always, always engage in a problem. So, like, Zach, have you ever had a situation where, and then state the problem or the symptoms of the problem? Either this, or this happens, Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, that happens to me at least twice a week. Okay. Well, tell me about that. You say, now
Yeah.
we're into a conversation about the problem. That's the right topic. You see. And then the next step in decision intelligence selling is in saying, have you ever, now that we've talked about the problem, is there anything else you can think? No? Okay. So let's talk about what the impact of the problem is. Okay. What's the impact? What is it? How does it make your life more difficult or challenging? So we'll get into that, and then we'll eventually get to the financial cost doing it the way you're doing it. So again, lighting with a kerosene candle, okay, or candles or kerosene has a cost to it. How much does it cost for your fuel each day? Well, it's about 50 cents or maybe, 50 sh or 500 shillings, whatever it might be. And so then you say, and how many days a week do you do that? Well, every day. Okay. Well, 7 times 50 is $303.50 a week. Now, how many weeks in a year? Okay, 52. Let's multiply that out, And so pretty soon you've got, you're spending $175 a year to just to burn up every year. Okay. And you keep doing that for about 5 years. Now let's say you just kept doing that over a 5 year period, you will spend about nearly $900, maybe a lot of money.
That's
Now,
expensive.
if I could show you a way to solve the problems of open flame and the health benefit, the health problems and, the inconvenience of having to go get fuel every day and all and the smell and all of that, if I could eliminate that and save you this money that you're spending, would you be interested?
Yeah. It's about like laying it down like really easy in front of their face, obviously speaking to like the problem they're facing, but like sometimes you have to educate them because they don't even know they have the problem in the first place. So you
That's right.
slowly break it down, you ask more question, you clarify, get more information, and they end up coming to that realization on their own that, okay, I maybe do have a problem. This is maybe something that like I should look into.
Yeah.
And
So
well,
then what happens at that point is that now, if I say, if I could save you that money, where you're not spending 800 and something, 900 something dollars over a period of 5 years, and again, we're talking about impoverished population,
of
right?
course.
Yeah, so that's a lot of money. You
It
say,
is.
would you be interested? Well, yeah, I'd be interested. Well, it's the same thing if we're selling to BT and we take them through that experience and we help them see that their selling ability is, if we're selling our services, if it's costing $100 million a year or 100 million pounds a year, would you be interested in solving that problem? And so now I have the information as the salesperson of what your problem is and which problems are important to you, which one are the top problems. I now understand that it's costing you money and it's a significant amount of money, and you see that and you want to solve it. Now I've got urgency to act. Now let me share with you what I can do for you. Okay. And so at that point, that's when the solutionizing comes in. And so as a salesperson is then going to take the product out, and they're going to sell the product according to the way that the features of the product solves the very specific problems that you mentioned earlier in the conversation. So it's matched up to their situation. And then finally, the last step is then valuating it. In other words, then showing this solution, how much money this will save you over so many years. And that's where the cost comes in, right? The cost from earlier. You say, now you spent, if you keep doing this for 5 years, you're going to be spending nearly $1,000. Now, that means that if these lights cost anything less than $1,000, then this is a good deal, right? So, and so, so actually, they're just $125, and the way you can pay for them is over time. You say, so it doesn't cost you more than what you're paying for fuel, except you pay them off after just a year. You say it's done, it's paid for. And then you have free lighting for the next 4 years.
And they're
And
safer as well, so it's like a win-win on a lot of aspects.
So in other words, the price is in relationship to the cost or the opportunity cost that you uncovered earlier. And so that pattern of problem, cost of problem, solution, and then value of solution is a formula that we've delivered 550 projects over the years, and it consistently produces great results.
And like I guess when you look at like, because obviously you've worked with companies, you've worked with people in like 50 plus like countries. Is there something that's like really surprising between like just that like decision making component and like different like cultures? Because I'm assuming like when you're looking at like a B2B context, North America, and then you look at obviously an organization, complete poverty, well, there's probably going to be a different like mindset or like I guess like have like I wouldn't say habit, but some sort of like habit around decision making between like these different like cultures there.
Yeah, it's not as different as you might think. Okay. Yeah. So again, this is this when I first got into this, there was a lot of times people would say, now in our country, the men make the decisions. I've heard that so many times, and what I want to tell you, that is not true. So,
Misconception on my end.
there's an old saying. There's an old saying that says that if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
I think everyone has heard of it.
So if mom wants something, if she really, really, really wants something, she knows how to get it, you say. So my job as a salesperson is to really do a great job in matching up, the problems they have and the cost of the problems, really laying that out really well, so that she has a confidence. If I'm talking to a woman or the male, they have the confidence to make a buying decision and then be able to defend it to their spouse. You see,
An informed buying decision.
it's an informed buying decision. You see, so yeah, I don't find there's a lot of difference in cultures that way. I mean, it's interesting in India. People just talk over each other quite a bit. Okay, at least the experiences I've had in the places of India that I've worked, is where it's really it sounds like a back and forth, very fast, sort of conversation, very fast language, et cetera. And so we got in there working with an organization called Orb Energy that sells solar complex solar systems to small and medium sized businesses, and so we were teaching consultative selling. And the American guy who was one of the managers there, he pulled me aside, and we were teaching precision listening skills and how you listen to what the other person says and then you play it back to them. You don't And instead of asking questions, you play back to the other person what it is they said, and they continue, kind of digging deeper into their situation. It's a very clever way of doing it. But the experience, he said, man, if I can get my guys to do this, this is going to be a game changer, because they're going to be able to break through that fast talking culture in India. And sure enough, it did. I mean, they had a tremendous increase in sales, that year and the next year, over, I think it was 150% that they were able to achieve in about 18 months. So,
Nice.
yeah. So anyway, that's my experience with culture and how people make.
Yeah, I guess maybe the question I should have asked is, as opposed to, I guess, like culture, I'd take it more like the type of companies. Like, we obviously have like Fortune 500 companies, and then we have like societal impact, like enterprise companies. Is there like any like common like mistakes that you see organization make when it comes to like sales strategies, like regardless of like their size or like mission? Because in the end, it's the same end goal. You're trying to solve a problem, educate your potential buyer, people you're working with. And again, there is obviously like a bit of a difference, but I'd love to hear like some perhaps like challenges that you see a lot of these people make when it comes to just selling general sales strategies, if that
Yeah,
makes
well, I
sense.
mean, again, it gets down. What we look at is a seller and a buyer. Okay, so it's like at the center of a target. It's like the bullseye of a target. It's how I always think of this when I get in to do consulting with companies, because we like to really look at it uber simplistically, and so we look at what is the breakdown that happens between the seller and the buyer. Where does it go wrong? And the way we do that is by looking through what we call lenses, okay, diagnostic lenses. And we use a particular one that we've developed. I developed it many years ago when I was a sales manager, and it's called the RACE framework, okay, RACE. So R equals A plus C plus E. And what that stands for is the results that you're generating, okay, so in other words, you look at the results and you're not hitting the targets you want to, that means something's not right on the other side of the equation. And those three things are where you will find flaws in things like strategy or training or the way people are operating or their skill set, et cetera. Okay. So the A stands for attitude. Attitude, more than any other component, and probably any other profession, sales really, really relies very heavily on a salesperson maintaining a positive and optimistic attitude. Because just because you do a great job making a sales presentation, you do it perfectly like you were taught, you close exactly like you're supposed to, you use the answers to objections like you're supposed to, there is no guarantee that that person's going to buy. You say, I mean, so compare that to, let's say, an accountant that has a way of working with numbers and formulas. And, gee, if you put the right formula in, you're going to get to the right answer. It's, every time you're going to get that. So in sales, though, attitude is critical. And not just is it positive or negative, but, are they expecting the buyer to buy? Are they taking full responsibility for their actions, regardless of what happens as an outcome? I mean, what is it that goes on in that person's head? Are they stressed out? Are they worried? Are they, all that? Because if they're that way, they're not going to sell very well. So that's the A. The C is competence. So we look at sales competence, the skills, the how-to and the know-how. And then also management competence. I mean, sales management competence is really at an all-time low, because companies just simply aren't investing time and effort into developing sales management skills. They make the assumption that people just should have it naturally because they're good salespeople. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. What makes you a great salesperson are the things that will work against you as a sales manager. Okay.
Yeah, it's true.
So, there are skills that you use as a sales manager that will really release the performance and build the performance of your salespeople. And then the last one is E, or execution. Okay. The right effort. So in other words, am I doing the right things at the right time with the right people? Okay. Am I executing my strategy brilliantly? Am I wasting time? You know, I mean, do I have myself aimed properly, or am I getting distracted by things that I shouldn't be doing? You know, like attending meetings internally that really are taking away from my selling time, you say. So those three things together, attitude plus confidence plus execution, is the way that we analyze what's going on in a company. And then we report that back to a company in the form of, you know, a report, and then, you know, line by line. And you know, it's quite revealing when people begin to look in the dimensions of attitude, competence, and execution. So the problems with closing or sales being off or whatever can always be discovered on that right side of the equation, if you know what you're looking for.
If you know, it's about looking at the data as well. And
That's right.
I guess
That's
like one
exactly right.
last question that like I would have for you that I'm actually like really interested about is like you've obviously worked with like both sides of the equation, Fortune 500, several companies. And if we look at more like the social enterprise like specifically, how do you actually go about like helping them like balance first like the mission, but also being able to have like sustainable revenue deliver on their solution? Because like a lot of people just focus on the mission, but they're forgetting you need revenue to be able to fulfill that mission in the first place.
You're exactly right. Well, a lot of these companies or organizations, I should say, because they, you know, a lot of times they're non-governmental organizations that have taken on selling as, you know, selling as a social enterprise. They've made this switch because that's where a lot of the donor dollars are coming from now, or from organizations. Well, USAID, you know, we're having some problems with USAID right now, but USAID has been investing more and more of its money into organizations that actually have a sales function, because it's a more efficient model, and it gets people to actually really change. The challenge, though, that we face with a lot of these organizations is the people, as you say, are very mission driven and really, you know, didn't think, you know, sales is like the exact opposite. So what we have to do is we have to help them see that selling really is quite a noble profession when done with purpose and intent to serve. Okay. So, you know, you can have a purpose to extract as much money as you can out of someone's pocket. Okay.
A
Share
purpose.
what companies call the share of wallet. Okay. What is the share of wallet you're getting out of this particular company? You know, and we want more of that share. We don't want it to go to company X, Y, or Z. We want to be the one that gets all of that share of wallet. You know, that's their purpose, you say, or some company's purposes. So when your purpose is to serve, you know, then it's easy to be able to tie that to perform, you know, the performance in sales. So obviously, if we want to change the way people light their homes, for example, then, you know, we need to sell a lot of lights. And the more lights we sell, then the more we deliver that impact and mission, you say. So as soon as you make that connection, it really helps. And also the style of selling, which we call DQ selling or decision intelligence selling. DQ is like IQ or EQ, right? DQ meaning decision intelligence. When you sell in a decision intelligence method, you're starting with the problem and the cost of the problem. And so it's not a salesy type of selling style. It's very it is very purpose driven.
I love that. No, perfect. I really appreciate your time, Scott. And I guess like one thing, as far as like if anyone wants to get in touch with you, because I know you obviously have two books, they obviously have a different component for like what type of like companies, but is there like any other way people should be getting in touch with you if they want to like reach out? Any other links we should add in the description there or?
That'd be fine. Yeah, you can write it connect at wrpartnership.com or info at wrpartnership.com, and we'll certainly call you back.
Are you pretty active on LinkedIn, any other social media platforms or
Yeah,
emails like
I'm on LinkedIn, and I've got
LinkedIn?
Instagram and all that. I mean, we have a social media person who handles all that for me, but
I'll put a few notes if anyone wants to like reach out and check out like the book here, but yeah, really appreciate your time, Scott.